This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Joyful, joyful.
Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. This is the show where we talk about spirituality and sexuality for our community.
And good evening and welcome to Spirit Lounge. Every Thursday night we appear at 8 o'clock, like magic.
Just out of nowhere, just right out of hats, actually.
Yep. And we just pop into the studio and it's all done. We're amazing, aren't we, Tal?
I know. How are you this evening?
Just fabulous for seeing you.
Now, would you tell us who we've got on tonight?
Well, tonight's guest is bisexual, transgender, Jewish. I love this bit. An out and proud cowgirl, though she doesn't have her spurs or hat on tonight. She's an activist, drummer, singer-songwriter, stand-up comic and radio DJ. Goodness me, welcome to Spirit Lounge, Sally Goldner.
Thanks, Joy. Thanks, Tal. Good to be here.
You are a woman of many, many talents.
And hats, so to speak. Country, Western and all other non-binary kinds, I suppose.
We, over the course of tonight, are going to get to know you a little more. I thought of a question, but it's far down the track. First, we'd like to ask you to tell us a little bit about your upbringing.
Well, I'm a lifelong Melburnian and grew up in the inner southeastern suburb of Brighton, or as the locals call it, Bratton, because that's what they do, and we all know how you can spot the widow in Brighton. She's the one wearing the black tennis dress, but
I've not heard that before.
But Brighton sort of, gosh, it seems somewhat far removed from where I am nowadays, not just geographically, but on so many things, because of the body that obviously was visible when I emerged. They said, that person has a male body, we will record male at birth, and therefore it's assumed that person will have a male identity. And I went to one school in Brighton, Brighton Grammar, for all 13 years of schooling, and it's an all-boys school. So upbringing, yeah. And spiritually, well, both parents are Jewish, and at that point they're degree, if you like, was called liberal, which is sort of roughly the equivalent of the Anglican Church. It's now more considered progressive. There seems, where there were three when I was growing up, sort of Orthodox, liberal and progressive, it's now sort of Orthodox and progressive reform. And we're certainly at the other end. We were not highly religious on Yom Kippur, the highest of high holy days, where you're supposed to fast all day. My mum and my grandmother and my sister and I were doing the rounds of the synagogues, as one does, and my sister and I got hungry, and not only did Mum buy us lunch, she bought ham sandwiches. So we weren't that religious. We obviously honoured the key times of the year, being Passover and the two high holy days, which, you know, usually come in around September, Rosh Hashanah, the New Year, and Yom Kippur. And I had a bar mitzvah at 13, but I don't know, it didn't feel like, with hindsight, in fairness, I didn't feel like I was coming of age as a man by a long way.
I don't know how many people really do think these days. It's like, 13, you're apparently a man now, and it's like...
Yes, for 12 years and 364 days, you're a boy, and suddenly, click, of course, yeah. It's a evolving, gradual, step-by-step thing.
And I'm not an adult now, so I think I probably need another bar mitzvah. I think that's definitely how it ends up feeling.
Yeah.
So how was, you mentioned, of course, going to a boys' school, and how was that experience? Did you, know at this point that you wouldn't want to identify as a boy, or that you, anything of that kind? And what was that process like?
I knew that I felt different, but I didn't know what, I'll say that in inverted commas, something was. I knew in terms of expression, at least, that I wasn't what I would call a masculine male. I was not a contact sport person. I was not a competitive person. I just liked doing what I was doing, but I didn't want to outdo anyone. So, you know, very, perhaps that's, I'll put that in inverted commas, that's stereotypical masculine traits, but that wasn't me. And Brighton Grammar, I think it was fair to say, was a pretty masculine school, and people who weren't seen that way, well, and if you weren't the sort of creme de la creme of either sport or academia, there was something wrong with you and you were a target. And a lot of, it wasn't, in my opinion, a great growing and learning environment, except if you were at the top. And so it wasn't a good 13 years. To be honest, years 7 and 8, I was verbally bullied by pretty much most of the entire class of 25 people, and no one really intervened to stop it. The three or four people who were my friends were still my friends, but they didn't sort of go to the chief instigator of the bullying and go, hey, stop it, cut it out. But it was partially that I wasn't someone who was going to, in inverted commas, belt the daylights back out at the bullies, and they could see they could had a they had a target.
So how did you survive to the end of school? What was it that kept you going?
The situation changed at the end of, well, as it was then, Form 2 gives away age, now 49, and you know, now it would be called Year 8, and it didn't seem to be the norm in those days, but what happened at the end of Year 8 was for the last 2 weeks of the calendar year, you went up to Year 9, so you were ready to rock, so to speak, when you came back after the summer holidays. And on the first day of Year 9, the guy in charge of Year 9 just said, in a very authoritative voice as I reached my B-grade butch acting voice, we don't bully at this level. And it stopped. It's all it needed.
Wow.
That's actually an amazing story. I'm surprised at how simple that was.
Well, yeah, and it took, unfortunately, there was a guy who was in charge of years 7 and 8, which was this sort of semi-autonomous part of the school called middle school, and he was a good guy, but he was ill for most of the 2 years I was being bullied, and the two guys who were the deputies alternating weren't very seen as very authoritative, so although we'd put in complaints, you know, bullying would stop for 3 days, then it would start again. And it was just this guy who must have just been someone who said, we don't do it, and did it the right way. And so at least it stopped for the last 4 years of school.
Now, Sally, you've chosen the music we're going to hear tonight.
Yes.
So we're going to have our first track called The Road Less Travelled by Graham Connors. Can you tell us why this particular track?
I'm one of those people who, you know, people say, what's your favourite type of music? I know we introduced me as the gal in the country and western hat, and I do like it, but I'm more a person who listens to songwriters, and Graham Connors is one of the most underrated songwriters, I think, in Australian, I'll say country rock type of, well, history. And you'll hear from this song that sometimes, well, I'll give a hint, you know, you take the road less travelled and take the long way home. And I think on many levels I've had to do that, which we'll talk about throughout the hour.
You're listening to The Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. Every Thursday from 8 till 9. And if you want to get into join our conversation, ask Sally or the team questions, you can send us an SMS on 0427-JOY949, send us a little email on onair@joy.org.au, or you can always contact us through our Joy app.
They can press the contact button.
Yes, that's right.
I know this.
You have to get in writing.
Even though I don't have the app, I know this. My phone's a bit, you know, ancient now. Mm-hmm. Well, we're talking to Sally Goldner. Now, Sally, you survived school, which seems amazing considering what you went through, but what happened after school?
I pretty much sum up about the 16 years from the end of year 8 through to about 29 and a half. They really get summed up in about a dozen words. Finished school, went to university, did a Bachelor of Commerce majoring in accounting, followed that up with the CPA, designation, which we'll call postgrad, and worked as an accountant. That was really 16 years of life. It was, you know, it really, with hindsight, I look back at that 16 years, but really most of the first 29, and I sometimes feel like it wasn't part of this life, physical life. I often say now that I've been alive for 49 years and 2 weeks, but I've only been spiritually alive for, well, 19 and a half years or something. It really was not a lot in that sort of first 29 years, and particularly in that second half.
Did you have relationships during this time?
Not really, no. A couple of short, brief things, but nothing really. It was a really unexciting time. I was in one of my accounting roles. I had a so-called brutal boss, one of those managers who thought that they could, because they had a title and were higher up the hierarchy, that everyone below them had to do everything that they said, when they wanted, how they wanted. Very difficult to work with. Believe it or not, if you tried to have a question this, you were told that you were snotty and impertinent. I always remember that. Very interesting manager. And you'd go and talk to her manager. Oh, well, you can't do anything about that. Well, yeah, in the end, I left after 4.5 years under that manager. And that was really, I think, where things began to wake up.
So what happened at the age of 29?
So after working for that person for about 4.5 years, and at that point the organisation I was working as an accountant for, I was second in charge of the accounting department, which was what I originally educated myself in. It was in a property area, and they'd overextended themselves, so the organisation wasn't growing. The manager was very difficult, and I just thought, what happened was one of my friends from university who'd moved to England was getting married, and I had had enough. I was really tired and burnt out. I had some money saved, so I thought, I'm going to have a holiday. And what started out as a 2-week trip to England for my friend's wedding ended up being a 3-month trip, I spent 4 weeks, in simple terms, about 4 weeks in Canada, 2 weeks in the UK for the wedding and other things, and then 6 weeks in the USA. So I sort of went all the way across and came all the way back. And I didn't know what I had planned. I had vague ideas of perhaps working in the UK. I'm in the fortunate position of being able to get dual passports because my dad was originally British, so I could have worked in the US on the UK passport without a hassle, whatever. But it wasn't what I wanted to do. I just needed some fun time. And I did lots of good things. I love Canada. I'd love to get back there one day. I liked my friend's wedding was great. I was only one of two people apart from his family who made it from Australia, and I did lots of fun things in the US. As a music fan, I got to go to Memphis, Nashville, and New Orleans. So music of all kinds, which was sensational, blues, country, and jazz, and that was fantastic. I stayed with relatives in Dallas, Texas, and did what every good or bad, take your pick, Australian does, did a Kentucky tour of 2 weeks. And perhaps
do you remember it?
Yeah, you picked it. Yes. I do remember bits of it. American beer is lighter than Australian, so I do remember it. Did that sort of naughty thing and came home a lot more relaxed. But I think what it did was, having cleared off the surface stress, what I'd been pushing down for years on many levels began to bubble up. And so just into my 29th year was the first time I'd ever told anyone about the images in my head of looking like a female or wanting to be a female. And that blew the lid off. All that stuff I'd pushed down for years, I had to try to do something about. And so at the start of 1995, I started to try to do something.
How was that initial? I imagine that must be a very difficult thing to do. I certainly think it's a very brave thing to do. Yeah. And how is that initial step? Does it get easier or harder, or is that the...
What happened for me was, after I did tell someone who was not helpful, and then I couldn't find any information about this. I mean, remember, this was 1995. Mm. The internet, I think, had just been born and was teething, but wasn't really, you know, what we think of today. You know, it's not like log onto Facebook and find a trans group or something. And even what internet there still wasn't much there. And so tried libraries, and in the end, I got referred. I asked, I thought maybe a psychiatrist knows something about this, not knowing a lot, and did get referred to a psychiatrist by my GP. And the psychiatrist really didn't know anything either and was doing a very psychotherapeutic approach, not really helpful. And at one point actually said, so you first remember this when you were about six, what was happening then? And I didn't know, as I said, I didn't know anything about anything at that point. And it wasn't, I'll very fast forward quickly and come back, wasn't until a few years later I found out that I suppose is one angle of possible conversion therapy, to try that sort of, well, it's because something happened thing, which we all know for gender identity, sexual orientation is just nonsense.
Mm.
And so I had by this time confided in another friend, and she was, turned out to be the saviour. She was very supportive. She did probably one of the best things she could have done. She came out to me as bisexual, even though that wasn't transgender. It probably gave a sense of connectedness. And I was only one of three people who knew, the other two being her current partner and her previous same-sex partner, obviously enough. And so she helped me through. And then she began to see that this, even though she hadn't come to the sessions, the psychiatrist didn't have a clue. And so she said, well, we've got to try to find someone else. And maybe she knew more than she was letting on. But one night she rang the switchboard on my behalf of the whole Monash hospital system, because she must have heard of the Monash Gender Dysphoria Clinic. And they put her and me through to a duty psychiatrist who said, well, I don't know about this, but I've got a friend who just has done her master's in sexuality and gender, and here's her details. And finally, on 27 April 1995, when I went to this psychologist, she listened to my life story of 29 and a half years in 20 minutes and said, well, has anyone ever explained it to you this way, that there are some males who are more feminine than masculine, there are some who might need to be female, and that's called transgender? And obviously for all trans and gender diverse people now, we'd have a broader definition, but that was the one that was for me specifically, and the light bulb came on. Never heard that. And that was where it turned.
Well, we'll continue this incredible adventurous road. Mm. But before we do, would you like to introduce our next song? It's a Neil Murray.
Yep. Well, talking of roads.
That's right.
Oh, segue time. Yay! it wouldn't be community radio without a segue.
Yeah, I put a little ticket into the segue.
It's pretty corny for Tao, but
yeah,
you know.
There's a little segue box, so you have to fill the quota.
Yeah, it's not like a swear box. But anyway, so Holy Road by Neil Murray. Neil Murray, formerly of the Warumpi Band, who did so much for our original inhabitants and toured with Midnight Oil in the 80s. And amongst other things, but this song has stuck with me for a long time, and I'll give a teaser, a genuine teaser. It actually made a lot more. It actually came even into more focus earlier this year. But again, about some of the lyrics, tune in. I'm not sure if we're doing the short or the long version on this one, but anyway, it just has resonance about a journey, and I think it's tribute to, it sort of touches, I think, on things that matter in terms of diversity for our Indigenous people from the 90s. So let's have a listen.
You're listening to The Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9 every Thursday. We are continuing our discussion with Sally Goldner, and we just left off, you were telling us, basically the moment, I guess, nearly, very, very clear cut, it sounded very great for a story, where you told it really the moment where you, in a sense, found out that trans, the concept of being trans even existed.
Absolutely. So for 29 and a half years, I'd had this something that was a big blurry question mark that suddenly had a definition. It made sense. And so I remember driving away from that appointment with that psychologist, and my mind must have been whirling at the subconscious level. And I had to pull over because I felt I'm not concentrating on the roads here. So I pulled over even, gosh, I think it was less than a kilometre away. And everything began to make sense. Why I hadn't fitted in at an all-boys school and why I didn't like the rough and tumble and blah, blah, blah. And why really, to be honest, none of life was really progressing. People always used to say, you know, what's your vision for your life? And I didn't have one because I was blocking out so much of it personally. And I think, you know, as time went on in broader areas as well. And all of a sudden I'd taken away the, we'll say, foundation of sand and gone right to the core, right to the heart, dare I say, right to the spirit. And, you know, just put in a solid foundation and everything began to make sense. And so if to use the house analogy, yeah, sure, having done the re-stumping and got the floor right, then I had to rebuild, you know, refix the walls and redecorate or something over about the next 19 years. But, you know, all of a sudden there was the missing piece of jigsaw that everything made sense, the past made sense. And I began to have a vision for the future. But I remember the critical part was 2 days after that appointment, waking up at 7 o'clock in the morning, just feeling so peaceful, which I hadn't felt, I don't think, really in years. And I knew that must have been something right. Even though I didn't know much about myself, I thought it's still, you know, I had this piece of jigsaw at last, but I didn't feel I knew much about myself then, but I suddenly felt like I knew something. And so really that's where it began.
So did you meet other people that were also trans? I mean, this was a long time ago and
yeah,
it wouldn't have been as open.
Totally. I mean, you know, not, as I say, not a lot of internet, but I did get put in touch with the two then trans groups in Melbourne, Chameleon Society and Seahorse Club of Victoria, and joined Seahorse and went to Chameleon's meetings, but just seemed to click more with Seahorse as it was, and began to meet more trans people at that point. Seahorse, over the years, from what, and I think they did a survey of their membership some years ago, 70% people at Seahorse don't make a permanent transition, and therefore come under the technical term of cross-dresser. So occasionally presenting as another gender identity, but not making permanent changes. And 30% were on some degree of hormones. And it was interesting, period 1995 to 1998, I felt more of a connection to that 30%. So I'd sort of got a bit closer to where I needed to be, but it wasn't for me so much about clothes. It was just needing to identify as female. And I think what happened over that 2.5 years, I'm grateful for that period. I think if I'd have tried to suddenly go from where I had been to, say, living full-time as female, I think that would have been too much of a sort of sudden shock. And I think so, but I gradually spent more and more time presenting as female. And it is a lot of, I think, reprogramming. It's how to reprogram yourself, in inverted commas, right. But to get rid of all that sort of wrong programming takes some effort. I mean, I think of the title of Anthony Van Brown's book, A Life of Unlearning. Well, there's some unlearning after trying. I say now with humour, I was trying for 29 and a half years to be a football-loving, beer-drinking, heterosexual, masculine male and failed on all five counts. And, you know, it took some unprogramming to stop thinking, well, that's who I had to be. And so I'm glad I had that 2.5 year period. But by the time I got to the start of 1998, I realised I needed to live full-time as female. I got to that point that most trans, you know, a lot of trans people do, that if you don't become who you truly need to be, you go nuts. And I think most gay, lesbian, bi people would understand that if you're trying to be heterosexual and you're not, it's like this constant tug of war in your head. And gender identity is, I think, pretty parallel in that way. And I got to that point where I realised I needed to live full-time and began to move, I think, steadily towards that from around February 98. The last time I really identified as male was in July of that year when we had a elderly relative's 80th birthday or something, and, you know, there was a family function for that. And that was really the last time I identified as male. So I sort of went from frequently, in inverted commas, cross-dressing through to about ramping it up until, you know, up until July.
How did you tell your family, and how did they take it?
That was a tough one, because my parents by this time had retired up to Queensland, and so they were interstate, and so they hadn't seen much of me. I'd come out to them as a cross-dresser, which was sort of neither here nor there, because at that point they weren't going to meet this person in, we'll say, the female form, so to speak. But when it came time to tell them that I'd transitioned and this is where I need to be, Mum was pretty shocked. Dad sort of didn't take it too well. And my sister, who sort of had ups and downs with it, she sort of was trying to be supportive but struggled. And I've never really what I don't think it's, you know, I think it's more her journey than mine, and I don't feel it's right to do that. But it was only last year that someone said to me, so you really did most of your transition by yourself. And yes, I had some counselling type supports, but yeah, there wasn't really anyone outside of that who was supporting. I can understand my parents' reactions. They're born in the 1930s, that sort of era where that it wasn't talked about. It wasn't so much transphobia or anything like that. They were worried that I wouldn't get work. That was their values. And they thought, oh, you're never going to get work, which wasn't really the issue in itself. It wasn't my being trans that stopped me getting work. So it was pretty difficult for them, and I understand that. To be honest, though, it would have been perhaps nicer to get some greater degree of support at that time.
What about the Jewish community? Were you still involved with that?
I hadn't been for some years, and to recap that, after my bar mitzvah, I was very relieved that I didn't have to go to Sunday school anymore. So a really Christian school 5 days a week, which involved, you know, Christian chapel church services at least 3 mornings of those 5, and Sunday school. And the other part of the Sunday school was we always used to get home late, and I used to miss World Championship Wrestling, which was the really critical thing. You knew I had to mention it. So I hadn't had a lot of contact with religion. Interestingly, at about the end of first year uni, Mum and Dad, who had sent me to a Christian school, not out of religious thing, but they thought it might have been a better education, and that's a reasonable enough reason. But they actually said, oh, we don't think you're mixing with enough Jewish people, so we're going to send you on the Australasian Union of Jewish Students tour of Israel. So they paid, fair enough. And that was interesting. And it was actually one little moment there was where I went to the Temple of the Baha'i in Haifa and began to see beyond Judeo-Christian type of worlds and realised, well, spirituality is just about spirit, and a lot of the religions really try and say the same thing, be honest with yourself and be nice to other people sort of thing. And it was interesting that the Jewish tour guide sort of poo-pooed it, oh, it hasn't been around that long or something like that. And I just thought, that's not very nice. But I didn't know much about much, as I said at that time, and didn't say anything. So I hadn't had a lot of contact with Judaism. I'd found it, to be honest, a bit hypocritical on a few things. But interestingly, in 1998, I managed to hook up with the Jewish lesbian group and went to the women's Passover, which was a very affirming experience on a number of levels. And to get the story of Passover from a woman's perspective was very eye-opening. And, you know, what Miriam, Moses' sister, did and all that sort of thing, and how she helped. And that sort of gets a bit overlooked, I think, in some of the scriptures and the more traditionally male-dominated Passover Haggadah, the story of it. So that was a really nice thing. That gave some reconnection to Judaism. And also, whilst not Christian, I did meet the MCC, and at that time the Reverend Heather Crichton was in charge, who was a lovely person and very supportive, because I was still, although I was progressing, I still had a lot of battles inside me to deal with, yeah. And Heather was helpful at that time.
I would like to know a little more about how your relationship with faith or spirituality developed, because it seems that you sort of eventually picked up groups where it's like, oh, these are groups that are actually a little more accepting, and I didn't even know that existed. But how was it, were you able to go back to, let's say, the more traditional, the synagogues you'd grown up with or communities that you've grown up with? Have you gone remotely mainstream at all? Or
I suppose to answer that, I'll go through a long journey. We've got a friend introduced me to the music of Wendy Rule, who is a sort of Wiccan pagan type of person, and that was really interesting. And I did like the non-judgmental approach that Wiccan pagan takes to lots of things, including, I'll say GLBT. I'm not so sure what its stance is on intersex, but I'm sure it'd be pretty positive. And I really liked that, but I also liked the basics of the four elements of earth, air, fire, water, but it sort of connected a bit but wasn't huge. And so I had a bit of that, and a friend of mine is into crystals and gay, I am wearing the rose quartz crystal that is very calming for someone who's a bit of a, an abstract thinker and probably thinks too much and needs to remember to just sit down and breathe once in a while. But I mentioned that in answer to your question because it took a long time back, and it was interesting. In about 2009 was where the Jewish Community Council of Victoria decided to do more for GLBTI, or late 2009 for a couple of years, and I got involved on their GLBTI reference group. And slowly but surely, there seemed to be this blending of spirituality and, for me, gender identity, and also sexual orientation as bisexual. And it was only this year where I really felt integrated, in that was the first Pride Shabbat service back in January, 2 days before Pride March, and to rock up to Temple Beth in Alma Road, St Kilda, which was where I was bar mitzvahed, and see the rainbow flag with the Star of David on it flying outside was just quite incredible. And there was a bit of a, drinks and nibblies before this Friday night service. And the usual Friday night service, apart from the major Jewish holidays, apparently, or the close to, only gets usually about 50 people. They had close to 300 that night. And for many of us, we were jokingly saying, whether we were GLBTI or the proverbial heterosexual and cisgender allies, many were saying it's the first time we've ever been to synagogue voluntarily in our lives. But it was a remarkable moment. And I remember at my bar mitzvah feeling really nervous and anxious. I was just worried about speaking in public or whatever, or remembering the things I had to remember. But it was quite cleansing and closuring and cathartic on many levels. And to know that I could go back to that synagogue anytime and be welcome was a really good thing. And it just really created a sense of peace. And so, to very quickly sum up, I now have I just feel that I am one of these forgotten people. I am a theist. I believe in a God, not anyone's God in particular, but some sort of force, formless stuff, whatever we want to call it. But I don't really have a religion. Judaism's a culture, and I just like to chill and meditate and connect with myself, and that's my faith and spirituality, really. It's my sort of unique blend of diversity, and it works for me, and I'm happy with it.
And you're on Spirit Lounge, and that was Eagles, Learn to Be Still.
Don Henley, one of the great songwriters, and I mean all of them in the Eagles were great, but that one, which was probably one of the lesser of the four new tracks when they did Hell Freezes Over, just about being in the present moment, calming, grounding, and Don Henley, Stan Lynch and others who wrote that, just I have that one in the car on rotation if I'm having a stressful day, and I just think they're amazing. And it's taken a long time to get to being still as a person, and that's sort of where it's finally got to.
And you said that meditation is important for you now?
Yeah, just chilling out, taking time out. I like to get away to the country where I can. But I think that where I finally got to be in the present more was earlier this year. I had the most unexpected and remarkable breakthrough in that of all things, I did the Radical Ecstasy course with Dossie Easton. And some people might be going, what's Radical Ecstasy and what's Dossie Easton? And who's Dossie Easton? And is anyone asking that?
Well, I am.
Yeah. So Dossie Easton is a sex positive author. Her best known book probably is The Ethical Slut, about polyamory, multiple ethical relationships. But Radical Ecstasy is a book that combines her stories with her partner, Janet Hardy, about BDSM and Tantra. Now, how the heck do you get a life-changing personal development breakthrough out of a weekend that's doing BDSM and Tantra? Well, it happened because there was just a very safe space, and if things came up, there were people on hand to talk to who were queer positive, sex positive, gender positive, all that sort of thing. And some lifelong stuff that I'd had about general shame, nothing to do with sexual orientation or gender identity, and also about, because I'm nowhere short on time, I'd got to a point as a person where I'd been ridiculed a lot generally by some family members, and my way of dealing with that was to be passive rather than try to fight back. And what had also happened is if people were aggressive towards me, therefore my response was passive. And I had let a lot of people dump their aggro on me. And it had happened in this community where there are some, at times, aggressive people in the course of my advocacy work. And doing this course and meeting the people there, I have finally found the tools to clear it out. And a month from this course and then a month afterwards, gradually, you know, 48 or so years of all that anger and ridicule was moved out of my system, sort of like breaking up a chest cold. It was difficult as it broke up, and thankfully this group formed a secret group on Facebook very quickly afterwards, but it did. And so, fine, I think with hindsight, you know, people, we always hear the saying, I've been living in the past. You know, some people do that, and some people, you know, it's better to live in the present. I'd been living in the future as a form of escapism, and in the last 8 months, I'm now in a position finally where I feel I'm living in the present, but have a vision of, a very clear vision of the future I want in all of my life. And you know, that was sort of what I hinted at. And I think very quickly, a lot of GLBTI people don't get to just look at themselves as a person. We go through enough hell as it is, and we don't get to look at that, and I'm glad now that I've done that, and I really feel like I'm in this third era of my life where, well, it's just rocking, and I'm enjoying it, and I'm, as a person and as an advocate, and I'm, yeah, ain't no stopping me now.
You're on Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 presents Absolutely Everybody. Sponsored by and presented by Anecto, the People Network. Tune in to Joy on Wednesdays at 12 noon for Absolutely Everybody. It's about you, it's about me, it's about inclusion, it's about news, people, and sharing common interests. Everybody, Absolutely Everybody, every Wednesday at noon, only on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is about to turn 21. I've been around. To help kick off our big birthday month, we are giving a few lucky Joy members a chance to join us at Aqua's Melbourne show on Monday, November 3rd at the Palais. Go to joy.org.au and follow the Aqua link to win. Celebrating 21 years of Joy with Aqua's Greatest Hits Australian Tour. Come on, Barbie, join the party. For more info and ticket sales, see ticketmaster.com.au. Hashtag Joy21.
Hello, hello, it's Chris, and I'd like to invite you to Hello Hello Plant Sales in Mount Alexander Road, Ascot Vale. Check out these specials. 3-inch pot English box and tall Mondo grass, $1.99. 3-foot little gem magnolias, $49.90. 6-foot weeping cherry blossoms, $89.90. 3-foot Japanese maple, $10.90. 10-litre bag of potting mix, $1.99. Check out all the specials at thetutuguru.com.au or come see me in my pink tutu at Mount Alexander Road, Ascot Vale this weekend.
Joy sponsor.
And you're on Spirit Lounge, and a big thank you to Sally Goldner. We'd like to get you on again because there's so much more that we would like to talk about and explore. So we will get you back on the show soon.
We'll compare diaries, as they say.
Exactly. And we're going to go out with Wendy Rule, Artemis, and this is a person you talked about earlier. And it's a thank you all and good night from Rev Joy.
And good night from Tal.
Follow me.
find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.